Hello. Welcome to Throwing Light. My name is Brandy Walker. This is episode 73, and it's an interview with Maria Fernanda on her experience of being a transracial adoptee. Hello, friends. It's good to be back. I'm very excited about this interview today. I reached out to Maria. I met her online a couple of years ago, and she is just such a sweet soul, and I have loved following her. I've loved learning about transracial adoption. We've talked a lot about, you know, what it's like to be adopted. And there's a part that I can understand as an adoptee, but there's this whole other piece, transracial adoption. I'll let her give you the full definition. So before we get into the interview, wanted to say 5 days left in June to enter the giveaway to get either a spiritual coaching session with me or a full psychic reading. And you can enter by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts and screenshotting it and then emailing it to me at brandyglows, brandyglows at gmail.com. And I will likely throw in an extra goodie in addition. Hello, welcome to Throwing Light. I am so excited today to have my friend Maria on the podcast. Maria is just, she's a really warm, kind soul. And so I will give it over to you, Maria.
Hello, and thank you so much for having me here in this space and for giving me the opportunity to share my story and, you know, use my voice in a way that will help other people.
Yeah, I'm so glad to have you on here. I love your work. I love the work that you're doing in the world. I think it's super helpful and important. And I just love you. Like, I think you're like a legitimately cool person. And I have really enjoyed like getting to know you and learning about you and everything, especially, you know, I think having to do with transracial adoptee. I'm adopted, so I do have that kind of, I understand, you know, what it's like to some degree, but I'd really love for you to share your story in your own words. I'll let you have that.
Thank you. Okay, so I am 36 years old. I'm married, been married for about 15 years and together 17 years with my husband. We've got two children, a 15-year-old and a 7-year-old. And I don't know, just within the past few years, I decided that I really wanted to kind of venture down this road and figure out what it truly meant to be adopted. And so I opened myself up to the community, and it has allowed me to learn about myself and learn about other adoptees and just the different stories and the diverse voices that are out there that I never knew existed until I was an adult. So I was adopted when I was, you know, a young child, and it wasn't until I had my daughter that I really understood the complexity of being a mother and having to make the decision to raise her, to love her, and to be all in with her and to start this family. So that was kind of like where it all began.
I definitely know that, you know, when I had my oldest, that there's something remarkable, and you're like, this is like my flesh and blood. And as an adoptee, like, there's something mystical and remarkable about that bond that you sort of, you don't know that you, like, for me as a mom, I didn't know that I was missing it necessarily until I had my first child.
Right. No, I agree. I agree. When I had her, she became my first blood relative, and it didn't click, you know, kind of like what you said, until it happened. But yeah, it was pretty amazing.
I'd love to hear more about your experience as a transracial adoptee. If you are comfortable talking about that, and really, you know, you could talk about, you know, I'd love to hear, I know that you have begun the journey of finding your family. I would love to hear whatever kind of you want to share in that realm.
Yeah. So I'll begin by telling the story of how I came into this world. So I was born in January 1984. I don't know any details leading up to being placed in the orphanage, but I do have the story of how I started my life there. So I was found by police officers near my home. I was born, let me go back a little bit. I was born in South America, in Quito, Ecuador, South America. So the police officers found me wandering around. I was about 11 months old, and they brought me to the orphanage. Now, a lot of countries have orphanages as opposed to like the foster care system. So there are these homes that are run by like Catholic charities and nuns, where sometimes the parents can come back, go back and forth, and, you know, keep an eye on the kids. But most of the time, these kids are brought there and then from abandonment, and they live their life there either until they're adopted or until they age out of, you know, the system. But I was about 11 months old, was brought there by the police officers. And then a couple days later, my birth mother did make her way to the orphanage to reclaim me. And then just a couple weeks later, some other ladies brought me back to the orphanage because I was found on their doorstep. And they brought me to the orphanage and nobody claimed me. After conversating with these ladies, with the orphanage and these ladies, they said, you know, this, we know where this lady is. They went to the house that my birth mother supposedly lived. They brought me there and I was not claimed. They didn't know who I was, is what was told. Now, I didn't know that story until 2014. So I grew up with a lot of questions about like how it really happened, and, you know, even my adopted parents didn't even really know. And then over time, you know, stories and details just kind of get harder to remember. And so I was there in the orphanage after nobody claimed me. And then when I was almost 2 years old, I was there for several months after, you know, the second time that I was there, and nobody claimed me, is when my adopted family came from America for work. My father worked for Exxon at the time, and my mother was there, and on her, you know, any time that she had downtime or that she wanted, she usually volunteered in the countries that they traveled to for my dad's work. So she was volunteering at the orphanage. She found me, and they worked it out with the orphanage that that I could be adopted. And the orphanage made it clear to my parents that, you know, by adopting me, you know, they were giving me a better life, and they wanted to make sure that when I was in America, like, the past was the past, and nothing was, I mean, it just wasn't that, you know, they didn't say anything about like connecting the cultures or anything about that nature. And so that's how I grew up. My parents are white Americans, and I am, multiracial. And so that is how my adoption is called, transracial adoption. I was born in a different country. I'm of different race than my family. So growing up like that was interesting. They loved me. All of my outside family outside of them loved me. And I was shown a lot of love and affection and worthiness and importance and all of that stuff. But the world itself, you know, is kind of a little different. It also taught me that even though I was adopted and, you know, had these privileges, that it wasn't always, you know, like perfection that we see with adoption. It wasn't all positive in the way that, you know, people assume that it probably is when a child is adopted from a poor country or a poor area or whatever. So that's where I am today, or that's where I was, and that's how I came about into this world, and how I, that is my story of how I am a transracial adoptee.
Mm-hmm. Did you grow up knowing that you were adopted?
Yes. I am very much darker than my family. Like I said, they're white, and I am mixed with African, Native American, Ecuadorian, Spaniard, like a whole bunch of stuff. There was no way that anybody could assume that we were related. I always knew, I always could tell the differences, but, you know, the love was always so strong that it as a young child, it wasn't, they never made it uncomfortable, and I never made it uncomfortable. If I ever felt uncomfortable, it was because of society and how they viewed my family and how they viewed us. There were a couple occasions where people said stuff. Adoption was very taboo back in the days. Like now it's like more people are adopting, more people are, you know, sharing stories and all of that stuff. But back in the 80s and 90s and stuff like that, it was taboo. And, you know, there weren't as many resources and stuff on, you know, what it truly means.
Mm-hmm. And so you started, you know, fast forward in the last year or so, I don't know if that's correct. You started an Instagram account called a Butterfly Series for transracial adoptees. And I'd love to hear kind of the origin story of that, and why you chose that name.
Okay. I did create a Butterfly Series back in October 2019, and it occurred after several years of attempting to actually write a book. I thought of the idea back in 2008, 2009 about writing a book, and I didn't realize how difficult it would be without knowing pretty much anything. Like I really had nothing to go on. And so when I began the book, it was literally me just like asking questions. Like, I don't know who this is, and I don't know what this means, and I don't, you know, and I'm lost and I don't know. And so it was really the evolution of working through that book and seeing how hard it was to write that book. I mean, I was in my, you know, mid-20s at that time. So I'm still like trying to truly understand what it means to be adopted in a way where I can really understand it as it pertains to how I live my life and how life, you know, how the world perceives me. And it was really hard. I spent over 10 years trying to write it, and it just wasn't coming, you know, it wasn't coming to. So I decided, you know what, maybe the book is not what I need to do at the moment. Let me write it in a different way. And, you know, there's so many platforms now, people telling stories and sharing their voices and sharing ideas, that I decided, you know, this is a way to do it. So I did create a Butterfly Series. When I was trying to figure out the words to it, I was thinking of how a butterfly becomes a butterfly and just the phases that it goes through, and how when I look at myself as a little kid, you know, in this world, this big, big world, just trying to navigate, and where I am now, the world makes a little bit more sense. So it, you know, pretty much my whole, like the bottom line of it is I'm telling stories and they're helping me heal. And I'm hoping that while other people read these stories, they can heal too, and they can find their voice, and they can say, you know, I can relate. Like this is, I've experienced this. Because you can feel pretty lonely when you are experiencing something that not very many people talk about. You can feel as though maybe you weren't allowed to talk about it. Mm-hmm. You know, I did struggle with, well, why do you want to tell your story? Like, how is it significant? And it is significant. If it's your story, it's significant. I've been sharing my story on there, and I've actually received a lot of feedback from other adoptees and birth mothers. And it has definitely, once I chose to do that and use that platform, and it has opened quite a few doors and quite a few experiences where I can talk to people and see that we, you know, we're all in this together, and we're just trying to survive and heal and do what we got to do.
Yeah. I guess that kind of leads into my next question of like, what would you like other transracial adoptees to know?
You know, I actually didn't know of the term transracial adoptee until a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. So when I did, oh my gosh, it made sense. It made so much sense on my perception of being adopted, because you just think of being adopted and it's, you know, new life, old life and all that stuff. But it really shifts how your life is viewed and how you view your life and how you navigate it. And so it kind of, I'm going to say, complicates adoption a little bit, just because from personal experience with me, you know, being a transracial adoptee, being adopted from another country and brought to the U.S. and, you know, I've lived a very American life. You know, I don't speak Spanish. In my 30s is when I truly began to dive into my culture and see like how beautiful it is and the history on it, that it's just brought new meaning for myself and myself and my knowledge and just growing as a human being. So my advice for other transracial adoptees is to know that what they feel is normal. And it is a little awkward and it can be uncomfortable, and to know that it's okay to have those feelings and to try and figure it out so that it makes sense for them. But also making sure that they, if the space is available to them, talking about it and being open about it, and talking to their family about how it makes them feel and how they can navigate together, and find support, and find support for it, because it can feel a little bit, it can feel lonely sometimes. And to try and be empowered by it, be empowered by your truth and your story, whichever, you know, form of adoption or type of adoption that they're in. But it really has allowed me to kind of just see things differently, knowing that it's a transracial adoptee, and just learning from that. And it's actually helped with my healing that I never knew that I needed. So yeah, just, you know, find the support, speak out about it, and just try and learn about, you know, learn about their history and their past in a comfortable, healthy way that, you know, doesn't make things too, you know, too hard for them.
Yeah. If you're comfortable talking about it, I'd love to hear your thoughts on on how you have begun the process of setting boundaries for yourself. Because I've witnessed you do that really well. And I would love to hear about that if you're comfortable talking about that.
Well, setting boundaries for myself has been very healing for me, but it's also been very important for me to do because I've got these eyes watching me at the house. And when they see that mama's hurting, or, you know, somebody's hurt mama, or, you know, I'm going through something, I can show them that it's possible to create boundaries so that there is an understanding of their worth. Mm-hmm. And I feel really good about having found the ability to know the difference of boundaries and all that stuff, because I didn't have it growing up. And not saying that my parents didn't teach me that, but it's just totally different now how we talk about boundaries. And even though, you know, a person may be a loved one, that creating these boundaries are important for us to flourish and to find understanding that we're humans and that that it's necessary. So what exactly was your question again?
Yeah, so I'm thinking, you know, as an adoptee, I think there comes a point where, and as a child, like as a, you know, as you grow into adulthood, especially, you know, depending on the nature of your relationship with your parents, I think it can become important to set boundaries with them. And I feel like I've had to do that with my own parents. And that's been met with like varying degrees of opinions. I've actually had to talk to my own kids about those boundaries, just because of the nature of our relationship. So I guess that's what I meant, was if that makes sense, like setting, as an adoptee, as a transracial adoptee, setting boundaries so that, with your adoptive family, so that, you can explore your culture, and your birth family, not from a place of guilt, I guess, I feel like the story of the adoptee is like, it's because it's awkward. And you know, when you have all these, I feel very loved, but I can get awkward. it's just, how do you navigate that? So I guess, does that make sense as a question? Like, how do you navigate that? Honoring, yourself.
Yes. Okay. Yes. No, that makes perfect sense. So the first thing that I had to tell myself, and this is for anybody, it's for my, regarding being adopted and sharing my story. First and foremost, I am worthy, and it is my time to share my story. Mm-hmm. It is my time to share my experience. It is my time to dive into this journey. I've never really had people say, I don't want you to do it. I've never really had people say, you shouldn't do it. In fact, there was more silence than anything, mm-hmm. Which can also, you know, be meaningful in a certain aspect. When I decided to begin my journey, I had asked my parents for any files that they had. And this was about 2007. And I remember I felt really bad about having to ask, but it is rightfully mine. Mm-hmm. You know, I shouldn't have had to ask, but I did, and they had it, and they willingly gave it over to me. And I remember taking it home, bringing it home, and just scattering everything out in the open and realizing, like, I have a big task ahead of me. And there's going to be a lot of uncomfortableness. me talking about it and me venturing and digging deep. When I did start telling people, like, I'm going to look for my birth parents, some people would then sometimes would share stories of people they knew and how they didn't want to search. And I wasn't really sure, like, what they were trying to say. I think in a roundabout way, they were kind of saying, like, you know, this kind of like off limits thing, and maybe you shouldn't, but they, like I said, they never really said, don't do it. They just would share stories of people who didn't. And I have always, since the thought came into my head that I wanted to search, and once, and I am very much like determined kind of person. And once I get an idea in my head, like, I don't let it go. And so starting this journey, I had to create the boundary that, you know, if anybody says anything positive or negative, you know, I've got to just keep searching. And as I found detailed information, I had to create this boundary based on making sure that I didn't have an expectation for people to respond in a way that I would hoped they would, you know, and like, I had to create that boundary for myself. Like, don't expect people to understand who don't understand. And, you know, listen to what you want to do and go forward knowing that this is, your truth. So I used a lot of that, those verbiage, like positive verbiage, like, this is your truth. This is your time to find your story, to find your truth, and to, you know, find the pieces that you feel will help you to continue to grow and to heal and whatever you needed. So yeah, the boundary was there, put in place so that I wouldn't get deterred from the direction that I was trying to go into. Mm. And that was just so that other people wouldn't influence me as I went on to this journey. Because some people will say, like, you know, well, why do you want to do that? You know, because, you know, you have a family. You have a family already, you know, and, you know, what if you find something that you don't want to hear or whatever? And I think in those aspects, I think people don't understand that we already know that stuff. You know, we already know that it's not, it may not all be like this beautiful romanticized story that is told to us. So
yeah,
just being protective of ourselves and knowing that we have every right, I think is my biggest boundary that I've created, and that I deserve it. I deserve to know.
Yeah, absolutely. What would you like adoptive parents to understand, especially adoptive parents who are white and adopting another race?
Those are really good questions, and I don't think that would have been asked back when I was adopted.
Mm-hmm.
I think the narrative was kind of like saviorism, white savior,
mm-hmm.
Which is also something that I've had to learn and be like, wow, that makes sense. My parents are very humble people, and they never paraded me around like, oh, we adopted these children or anything like that. But I remember at a very young age that other people looking in would always be like, you guys are just so amazing. You guys are so amazing. Like, what a blessed life she has. And I remember, you know, I remember that. And I remember as a teenager, the same thing, like right in front of me, and nobody really asked me anything. You know, nobody asked, like, well, you know, how is being adopted like for you?
Mm-hmm.
Because being adopted for me and being adopted as the adoptive parent are totally different things. You know, we have a lot of trauma that the adoptive parents don't know. So I would tell them to, you know, if they're going to choose to adopt, to really look deep in and know that it's not like the movies. I think more movies are showing like the realistic aspects of it, but just understand that the adoptees are the storytellers in this. And while one thing that I did do when I was starting to write my book was I was setting the story of telling from my parents' point of view. because whenever I talk to her, she so lovingly explains how she found me, and there's just a lot of love in her, you know, and sorrow, because she knows the bigger picture of it. But adoption is truly from the eyes of the adoptee, and to make sure that they're listening to their children and understanding that it's a whole different experience coming from us. So I would say it's kind of naive in a way, but I think more parents are understanding the bigger picture now, mm-hmm. Like with incorporating culture, mm-hmm. incorporating language, like that wasn't a thing back in the day. Like, and if a parent did, like, then that was just, you know, that percentage or whatever. But those things are important. Those things are important to make sure that the adoptee's story doesn't just begin in the orphanage or in the foster care system, but there is a whole other story, a whole other history. And when they're talking to their kids, because I remember my mother would tell me about her grandparents and growing up and everything, other part of me wanted to know about my birth family's upbringing and how they were and how they lived their life and how they came to be and all sorts of that. So to know that the adoptee story doesn't begin when they're adopted, it begins mm-hmm. at conception. It begins mm-hmm. from the parents.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can, help them find that, help mm-hmm. them find those pieces. It'll make it a little bit easier for them to navigate through life if they are not constantly questioning things that they don't understand.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But pretty much just adoptee parents, listen to your kids, and truly listen. Let them talk to you without judgmental eyes, judgmental expressions, without feeling as though this is about you, because it's not about you.
Mm-hmm.
And just be really mindful of the adoptee experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like it's interesting, because I think that, you know, I think it's natural for adoptive parents, you know, there is big love and there is like, there is a sense of like, this is my kid, you know, and you never want your child to be in pain. And you never want to think that you cause your child pain. And I think there's a sense of like, what I'm thinking about is like, we can honor and respect our child experience, and manage our own, like not put our own feelings on our children. And that's like a parenting thing. And so, I think that might be helpful. Like, and I think that sort of feels like it's changing a little bit. Like parents like today have more of a sense of that. Whereas like parents, like my parents don't have, like they, you know, and yeah. So I feel like there's a sense of like, you have to let your child, like feel their feelings, without judgment. And then, yeah. And then that doesn't mean that you like, you know, cut off your own feelings or like not allow yourself to have feelings. Cause of course you're going to have them. I feel like this is like a, like white people in general, you know, like we have to deal with the damage that's been done, mm-hmm. and the system that we're swimming in. And we're allowed to have feelings, but we don't need to like put that on anybody
right.
else,
right.
Especially people of color. I'm going to switch the questions a bit, because I want to ask if you have a message for your childhood self. First, before we.
Oof, man. If I could send her a message, I would like to tell her that she is worthy, that she is worthy and loved, and that she will find like self-love through her journey to find answers, and that she probably is wondering like when the moment is going to happen for her when she gets these answers. And I can tell her from the emotions that I have felt that for me personally, as an adult, is the best time. I'm an empath and I'm sensitive and I have a lot of love, and I don't think she would have understood how to navigate through her feelings and her self-worth if she had received all these answers. So to know that for her to fully grasp all of it, she would need to go through some of the stuff that she has gone through, which of course, you know, when you think of children so innocent and so young, you don't want them to have to experience anything that is uncomfortable. But I did make it through. And it has allowed me to really heal properly, being able to understand things in a different way now that I'm older as opposed to younger. So to keep seeking, keep looking, and knowing that her voice and feelings are all valid, and that there is a community waiting for her that's being built. She doesn't know where she will be able to speak her mind, and where it will be about her story and not about a different story or a different narrative.
I love that. So with a butterfly series, and as you kind of, it's very new. Have you thought about where you want to take it and kind of the legacy that you want to create? And I loved what you said about, you know, trying to write a book and ultimately realizing that at this point right now, that wasn't the way you wanted to tell your story. And the importance of pivoting in that and knowing when it's time to pivot. So yeah, so future of Butterfly Series, like what your vision is for it.
I would like to create a community, and it's going to take me being involved in the community a little bit since I'm still new. Mm-hmm. I had to figure out what way I was going to tell my story, and I figured it out that I want to tell it by talking more about how I feel and how I felt and what I saw through my eyes without really bringing up anybody else's narrative. As if I was in a room full of women or men, you know, talking about it. And we just talk about our feelings and, you know, our growth and our process into it. So I think I want to create a community, and I'm kind of seeing how other people are doing it and what works for them. And I am an introvert at heart, so I have to kind of ease into it so that I'm still kind of comfortable, but also, you know, step out of my comfort. But I haven't truly decided if I want to do one-on-one with people or create a community where I do something in my city or just online. I haven't yet. I'm kind of been stewing on it and meditating on it and just trying to see like where, what is, you know, what direction I'm being pulled in. And I think the more that I share my story and the more that I talk to people and the communications that I have with them, I'm kind of starting to see what is needed by just talking to people and not so much reading what I'm reading, but actually talking to people that are seeking me out. So I'm not 100% sure. I'm going to still share my story. I write little tidbits on there about what I'm going through and where I'm at in my journey. And so the the full purpose, I don't think, has been discovered yet. Still think that it's like in the beginning stages.
I really love that. And I've loved witnessing your journey, and I think it's so important, just even for yourself, to just have a space to share how you feel and to be able to name how you feel. Are there any questions that you would like me to ask or that you think are helpful within the frame of this conversation? This conversation, us and the broader transracial adoptee conversation.
Not that I can think of right now. I think I just want adoptee parents to just kind of listen, to just listen to the stories. Yeah. And find resources that are by adoptees that are, you know, that are true stories. Mm-hmm. So yeah, no really questions or anything of that nature. Just for people who are listening or who want to learn about it. Just make sure you're listening to the adoptees, because they are they're the professionals in this story.
Yeah, absolutely. Where can we find you? Where can people who want to check out your stuff find you?
I'm on Instagram at Butterfly Series, and I'm also on Facebook, and they're connected to each other. You can message me through there or leave a comment. I'm currently in a pretty interesting part of my journey. Right now, I am trying to find the paternity of my possible birth father. So we had some people seek me out asking questions about that. But yeah, you can follow me on a Butterfly Series. And then I also have my other personal page where I don't talk directly about adoption on there. But it's just the life, it's just my life as an adoptee at Ebonova, also on Instagram.
Right on. Thank you so much, Maria. Grateful for you. And I'm grateful to share your story.
Thank you for giving me this space and for listening and for supporting me.
Absolutely. And